The Exchange Daily Podcast is brought to you by
Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Opportunity.
And Dartmouth Hitchcock, creating a new model for healthcare where leading health systems collaborate to improve care for all of us. A sustainable system improving the health of our communities for years to come. Information at imagine.d-h.org.
And Doucette Survey, serving your professional land surveying and mapping needs in New England. Now with offices in New Hampshire and Maine. Information at doucetsurvey.com. That's doucetsurvey.com.
Enjoy the show.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Last fall, voters in Oregon legalized marijuana, allowing adults over age 21 to consume it, grow it, and share it with other adults, of course. And our guest today applauded the move in his home state. We're talking this hour with Congressman Earl Blumenauer, who's represented the Portland, Oregon area for almost 20 years. Congressman Blumenauer has long supported relaxing laws regarding cannabis, and on Capitol Hill, he's promoted bills toward that end. Congressman Blumenauer is in New Hampshire this week. He co-hosted a forum on federal marijuana policy with State Senator Martha Fuller Clark in Portsmouth last night, talking about a variety of topics, including legalization in his home state. But whether New Hampshire goes this route is a controversial question. While House lawmakers have often voted in favor, many groups are opposed, among them law enforcement and those involved in combating our state's other substance abuse problems. Let's hear from you this hour. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Congressman Blumenauer, welcome to The Exchange and welcome to the Grand State.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Well, what's your overall goal, Congressman, in coming to New Hampshire and coming to other states and giving talks like the one you gave last night?
Well, we're working to try and make sure that we have a rational program dealing with marijuana going forward. We've watched for the last 45 years a failed program of prohibition, which doesn't prevent marijuana from getting into the hands of children, which absolutely should never happen. It fuels a vast underground network, including billions of dollars to Mexican drug cartels. It has stifled research on the effects of marijuana. At the same time, we've watched a revolution take place. There are now 39 states and the District of Columbia and Guam where some form of marijuana is legal. And as you mentioned, my state became the fourth state to legalize adult use. And we're watching this take place in states around the country where there will be more ballot measures coming up. My goal is to have the federal government be a better partner, not engage in practices that really are goofy, like making legal marijuana businesses be all cash.
Because they can't deal with banks.
They
banks
can't
are afraid
access
to
federally regulated financial institutions. But basically to turn the corner on this, because we've watched now for over half a century where it hasn't worked. There have been pernicious effects in terms of racial discrimination, which can go to in greater depth. And it's fun to be able to talk with people around the country about how we move forward at this point, because the people are ahead of politicians in this regard, and they're the ones that are going to make sure that this happens.
So when you say turn the corner on this or make sure this happens, are you talking about legalization, Congressman?
Well, ultimately, I'm confident what we will do is treat marijuana like we treat alcohol. It will allow the states to be able to establish policies, taxation, regulation as they see fit or not. If Colorado wants to have adult use and Utah doesn't, that should be up to them. I think what is important that the federal government tax it, regulate it, and as I say, get out of the way.
So if the federal government taxed it, regulated it, and got out of the way, Utah could be a no marijuana state.
Absolutely.
And Colorado could be an all marijuana
Absolutely.
State.
Absolutely.
Nothing would stop Utah from saying no.
I mean, that I think that's the best compromise going forward, because different states have different approaches, just like they've done with alcohol. Every state treats alcohol a little different in terms of how it's taxed, how it's regulated, how it's sold. And it took a while for states to get to the point where everybody was going to be wet, where alcohol is widely available. And I think in an area like marijuana, it's entirely appropriate to allow people to reach their own conclusions, have their own path forward. But we shouldn't have a federal system that treats marijuana as though it were as dangerous as heroin or LSD, and poses all sorts of burdens for medical marijuana and for adult utilization.
The number for you to join us here in The Exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Today in The Exchange, again, our guest is Oregon Congressman Earl Blumenauer. He's in New Hampshire this week talking about his efforts to ease federal marijuana laws. And Exchange listeners, as you know, this is a huge debate going on around the country. As more states move toward medical marijuana, decriminalization, and in a few cases, including Oregon, legalization. Join us with your questions and comments on this topic, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter, 1-800-892-6477. So, Congressman, lots of questions for you. But first off, just to remind us, so what happened in Oregon? Was this the legislature or was this a ballot measure?
Well, actually, I was in the Oregon legislature as a child member of that body in the 70s when Oregon became the first state to decriminalize marijuana. And at that time, we actually had a vote that would have authorized two plants for personal consumption. That didn't quite make it. We hit a period of the war on drugs that moved it back. 1996, California became the first state to legalize by a vote of the people medical marijuana. Oregon followed soon thereafter. In 2014, there was a ballot measure. Fiercely contested, debated all over the state, but it passed with a 56% yes vote, the highest of any state. As of the 1st of July, it became legal. It will be sold the 1st of October, and we're moving towards full commercialization within the next year.
And how are you guys going to be different, if at all, from Colorado?
Well, we've been looking closely at what's gone on in Colorado, in the state of Washington. We're moving it through our Oregon Liquor Control Board. We're allowing the original sales to be from medical dispensaries. We're trying to take the best of the experiences and tailor it to the Oregon experience. And candidly, that's an interesting position that New Hampshire is in now, because 39 states, for instance, have moved forward in some form with medical or adult. You can pick and choose. You can look at what makes sense, be able to inform your decisions going forward. There's never been more information available upon which to make a policy decision.
Is there enough good research, good data? You yourself have said the prohibitions on federal dollars going to marijuana research is a problem. And I've heard, Congressman, people on both sides of this, you say there's just not enough good data. What do you think about that?
Well, yes and no. I mean, adults have used marijuana for thousands of years. It has proven therapeutic benefits. And I talked to three people last night in Portsmouth who talked about the difference it made to them. So that is clear. George Washington and Thomas Jefferson grew hemp before we were a country.
For rope and paper, though.
Yeah,
I mean, we have no evidence that they were
smoking pot. No, but hemp is caught up with this prohibition now. Even though you can't smoke enough hemp to make anything other than make you sick, there is a prohibition against American farmers producing it, even though you can buy legal hemp products in every community around the country. That information is clear. Being able to deal in more specifically about medical aspects, the federal government has interfered with that research going forward. We don't have a good test now for impairment, which is crazy. We ought to be able to know if people are impaired, and having a good test like we have a blood alcohol test, we don't have for marijuana. Being able to understand what those properties are that enable a derivative of marijuana to calm the symptoms of little babies with extreme epilepsy. I mean, just violent seizures. This appears to be one of the few things that actually helps them. But the scientists I've talked to, the neurologists, the doctors, they can't get marijuana to study legally. They know it works for their patients, but they're in a situation where being able to understand, being able to deal with dosage, being able to have standardization of products, there are a whole range of things that would benefit from modern research that the federal government interferes with.
So if we don't have this research, for example, as you said, a good test for impairment, if we don't have enough research to understand or fully appreciate the benefits, is this a good time, Congressman, to embark on a national experiment legalizing marijuana without that data backing us up?
Well, we've already been embarked on this national experiment. There are 20 million Americans who use marijuana every month. We have, as I say, 39 states since 1996 that have gone down this path. So it's not quite so experimental, you know, head scratching. This is something where the American public has made their judgments in terms of using it, in terms of approving it. And if you ask Americans the question today, the majority of them would say it should be legalized, not just decriminalized. A majority would say it's legalized. I dare say that that's probably public opinion in New Hampshire based on who I've talked to and what I've seen. So I think that this is, in fact, it's probably late in the game because we've already had this being accepted by Americans. We have a large marijuana industry in the United States right now. It's just that most of the profits go to Mexican drug cartels and street thugs.
You're talking about the illegal.
The illegal
trade.
Yeah.
Lots more to talk about after a short break. And let's hear from you. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. More in a moment. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, federal marijuana laws and when state law conflicts with national policies. We're talking with Oregon Congressman Earl Blumenauer. He's in New Hampshire this week promoting his efforts to relax federal regulations around marijuana. Let's hear from you. The exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Should New Hampshire go the route of Oregon and legalize marijuana for adult use? Should New Hampshire decriminalize the possession of small amounts of marijuana, which has passed but in the House but has not yet become law here in the Granite State? And as you all know, New Hampshire has medical marijuana, but dispensaries are yet to get up and running. Join us with your questions and comments at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Congressman Blumenauer, before we go to our listeners, just before the break, we were talking about what people on both sides of this say is a lack of good data, good research. I asked you whether, given that there isn't enough research on this, whether the country should jump in on a national experiment legalizing marijuana. You mentioned that marijuana use is accepted by a majority of Americans and so forth. But if that acceptance isn't backed up by good scientific research, is that really a good reason to do it? I mean, I have a 12-year-old who wants to eat candy all the time, but I'm not going to let him do that.
Well, I mean, let's be clear. We know, for instance, that marijuana is less addictive and harmful than tobacco. We know that there has never been a case of death by marijuana overdose.
Although there have been overdoses reported.
Well, there are people who, Maureen Dowd, who took a handful of edibles and then washed it down with Chablis, had a negative. But in terms of just in terms of overdose deaths, no. So in terms of basic information about whether or not deterrence has discouraged people from using marijuana, the evidence is abundant. You know, there are millions of people who use it. So they've made those judgments. The evidence is clear that the way the law is applied is blatantly discriminatory. If you're a young African-American male, you are four times more likely to be arrested, cited, or jailed than if you're white, even though whites are more likely to deal than African-American men, and they use it the same amount.
So would decriminalization help with that, Congressman, instead of full legalization?
Well, it would be a step forward, but it could still get people on the wrong side of the law. The cover story in the New York Times Magazine about the bail game, where people can be arrested, cited, that get caught up, and failure to be able to put the money on the table for them to be bailed out creates all sorts of problems. But as a practical matter, when we move past the criminalization of marijuana, we make it legal, it's going to have a salutary effect in terms of the minority community that has suffered disproportionately and in jail disproportionately for these offenses.
You know, when decriminalization came up in New Hampshire this year, and it comes up every year practically, the state Senate turned it down, a House bill that supported decriminalization. Just going to quote from a piece from the Union Leader by Gary Reno. Opponents said the change would send the wrong message to young people and send New Hampshire down the same path of Colorado, where marijuana shops outnumber Starbucks 2-1. Do you want New Hampshire to be like Colorado? Asked Senator David Booten. You've got to be kidding. This is not New Hampshire and not what New Hampshire family values are all about. What about that decriminalization message, Congressman, that tells kids, yeah, go ahead, you'll just get a slap on the wrist, no problem?
Well, first of all, I have yet to find anybody who thinks that a kid in New Hampshire can't get a joint if he or she wants. I mean, let's just be honest about this. Furthermore, we're in a situation now where that vast underground network that supplies marijuana in New Hampshire, nobody checks a driver's license to see how old this kid may be. And if we're worried about the heroin epidemic and the prescription drug, I mean, this is killing people in New Hampshire. That local drug pusher who isn't licensed, who's not regulated, who's illegal by definition, is much more likely to say, well, hey, kid, you like that? I've got something else here that you can snort, smoke, or shoot. I strongly feel that marijuana and other drugs should not be in the hands of kids. But by making it available through a vast underground network that we haven't been able to stop in 50 years, by locking people up, by spending billions of dollars on a failed system of prohibition, it hasn't stopped it. And instead, we watch other things happen. We don't have the resources to deal with people who are addicted to anything, who need treatment. And we can't concentrate on where the greatest need is. I think when we legalize adult use, we'll be able to have an honest legal market, make it much less likely that there will be illegal operators, and we'll have money that we raise from taxing it that we can deal for addiction and other government services.
Got a ton more questions for you, Congressman Blumenauer. But let's go to our listeners. Lots of people want to jump in our conversation. And the number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. First up is Martha in Concord. Hi, Martha. Go ahead. You're in the exchange.
Yes, thank you very much. I'm interested in learning what regulations should be in place to address youth that's under 21 accessing marijuana if legalization were to occur here. I think the biggest concern, and I sympathize and support what Congressman Blumenauer has said about the black market, but we need to be able to assure parents and families that we're not increasing youth use.
Yeah, Martha, thank you very much. And I'll follow up on her call, Congressman, with an email from Steve, also in Concord, who says, I'm the father of a teenage boy and a preteen boy. I'm worried about drug use. I've heard that marijuana is bad for the development of young brains and can lead to addiction. Teenage boys are also substantially more likely to get hurt or killed in a car than anyone else. Steve asks, how is legalizing marijuana going to help my family avoid drug use? How is having more stoned kids or adults on the road going to help improve our society? We should talk about highway safety, too. But the young people question that Martha's asking and that Steve is asking.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I just repeat what I said. Nobody tells me here that kids cannot get marijuana if they want it.
But legalizing it would make it, it is argued, more available and more acceptable.
Well, think about this for a moment and look back at prohibition of alcohol. Which was a failure. There were more speakeasies at the height of prohibition than saloons before we started. And this is one of the arguments that if you repeal prohibition, alcohol is just going to be available widely, and that young people are going to abuse it. Well, first of all, young people were abusing it. But what happened after prohibition was repealed? There was a system in place for a market that was regulated and licensed. There was a valuable liquor license that could be lost if there were sales to underage patrons. Now, it's not perfect. We still struggle to keep alcohol out of the hands of kids. But we found that there was a way to actually deal with the control. Right now, there is no effective control keeping it out of the hands of kids. In fact, what I hear, and when we were campaigning around Oregon, most people would admit that it was easier for their kids to get a joint than a six-pack of beer. The other thing is, if we're not being honest with the kids, if we're pretending that it is as dangerous as heroin, for instance, more dangerous than meth, for heaven's sakes, under federal statute, how do we expect them to take us seriously? They know that's not the case. So we're being honest about the effects, being able to concentrate the enforcement on kids which should not get it, and be able to stop this vast unregulated market that is fueling Mexican drug cartels and more serious drug problems that you're battling here.
Well, I definitely want to ask you about the heroin epidemic and any connection there. But just we keep getting back to this point about, you know, people have concerns about teenagers, for sure, what we know about the teenage brain. And Congressman, you keep saying, look, adolescents are getting pot anyway. Is that an argument for legalizing, though? I mean, we could say folks are getting heroin anyway, but few people would say let's legalize heroin.
Well, my point is that the American people have decided, millions of them, that they are going to smoke marijuana, whether it's legal or not.
But is that an informed choice, given the lack of research?
Well, I'm not talking about whether it's an informed choice. I'm talking about that is a fact. And so when you have a vast, unregulated black market where any kid in America can get a joint in a few minutes, we need to be realistic about how we combat that. And being able to stop this vast black market, to be able to concentrate enforcement to make sure that it stays out of the hands of kids, being honest with them about its impacts, and being able to do the additional research, to be able to have product control. Right now, nobody knows what they're buying.
Unlike alcohol, where it says this is 6%,
you know,
this
exactly,
is 10%.
Absolutely.
You know what the
alcohol level is. There is quality control. And I think we need to be realistic in terms of what hasn't worked. We need to be focused on what we need to do to be able to educate kids, to protect kids. But we need to be realistic, because right now you're not protecting kids. Right now you are spending billions of dollars on a failed system. And right now you don't have the resources to deal with people who are addicted, who need help. And it's a, I think it's a prescription for disaster.
Let's take another call. And this is Jennifer in Hancock. Hi, Jennifer. You're on the exchange with Congressman Earl Blumenauer. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So I'm calling because I took care of my mom who had cancer for many years. And I would go and travel to her house. I'd stay with her during the weekday and go home on the weekends, making her soups and everything. I personally don't use, but my mom had, you know, got some from a friend, and I saw the benefits in her literally overnight. She was able to eat. Her nausea subsided. Her pain went away. Her spirits were lifted. And so to me, taking that away from someone that needs it for medical purposes, I don't understand.
Jennifer, it really helped your mom going through cancer, and we've definitely heard similar stories. What do you think about going all the way with legalization?
You know, again, I personally don't use it, but I've seen the results and the benefits in so many people. I think we should have the choice.
Okay. And Jennifer, I think she said, her phone was breaking up, I think she said we should have the choice. I'm guessing you agree with her,
yeah,
Congressman Blumenauer.
I do.
Here's a Facebook comment from Charles, who says we should not legalize. We need to get people off mind-altering substances. You touched on, Congressman, before the heroin epidemic. And some people are saying what you're saying. You know, look, let's focus on this because it's really dangerous and it's killing people and everybody knows that. But other people say, look, is this the right time to introduce yet another mind-altering drug? I mean, bad timing.
What planet do those people live on? I mean, go to a junior high and find out whether or not this mind-altering drug has been introduced. It is here now. And in fact, it is more dangerous to have tobacco. And if we were doing the federal rescheduling over again, tobacco, which kills still 400,000 people a year, is highly addictive, is destructive to health. That's where we would be focusing more attention. I don't want people driving who have been impaired by marijuana. But you talk to people in emergency rooms and law enforcement, a marijuana-impaired driver is not road rage, is not going to be speeding. I mean, they're more likely to pull over or go get some Cheetos or something. We need to put this in perspective. We have perfectly legal substances now that for some people are more damaging. Some people, alcohol is toxic, and in fact, you can have alcohol poisoning that will kill people. And for some, it triggers reactions that are really scary. So somehow singling out marijuana, which isn't as deadly, which isn't as destructive, and is already pretty pervasive, I think is a case of misplaced priorities where we can do a better job of helping people in all of these circumstances by being honest and being reasonable about what we do.
Let's take another call. This is Todd in Litchfield. Hi, Todd. You're on the exchange. Go ahead. Good morning.
Hi, thanks. Yeah, I'm a psychologist, and I think, you know, I get to see every day all of the things that the congressman does not see, the families that get torn apart by this, the spouses or the kids that become apathetic and withdrawn, their grades go down, they gain weight, they drop out of sports, it impacts their IQ. So I get to see all of that, and he doesn't. And he's peddling this false promise that, well, if we regulate it, we can use the money to pay for treatment. I've never had anyone come to my office and say, oh, by the way, my treatment's going to be paid for by the alcohol tax fund. It just doesn't exist.
Yeah, New Hampshire keeps raiding that fund that was supposedly going to go to alcohol addiction.
And if you legalize growing it, there's going to be a huge portion of people who just grow it at home. They're not going to buy it through any system where they have to pay more money and taxes on top of it. That's just a silly notion. We don't have enough money to pay for the addictions that we have now. And we tax, you know, we could tax alcohol at 100%, and it wouldn't pay for all of the treatment that people need, because it takes years and years, sometimes lifetime worth of treatment, because we're becoming a very drug-accepting society. And the hardest drugs to come off of are the depressants.
Todd, thank you so much. Good to hear from you, especially given your personal experience. You know, he raised a point that I hadn't thought of, that, you know, you do keep talking about regulating it, making sure kids don't get it. But he's right. It's harder to make bathtub gin than it is to grow a couple pot plants in the backyard. So this tight regulation that you're talking about, he's saying, no, people just grow it.
That's actually not what's happening in Colorado. And it wasn't that hard to make bathtub gin and moonshine. But what we found is when we ended prohibition of alcohol, even though people had been making it, they stopped having the illicit activities. There was less of the home brew, although you can still do it, and people accepted the commercial areas. We're watching in Colorado where it's going to be a $1 billion industry. If it were so easy for everybody to just do it on their own, it wouldn't be a $1 billion industry in Colorado. There wouldn't be people moving in to be able to deal with the product development. I happen to agree that the negative impacts on young people are severe.
We've studied those teenage brains, and marijuana is not good for those brains.
It's absolutely the case it's not good. I've got two little grandsons. I don't want them to be exposed to marijuana. I am absolutely convinced that by having a system that taxes, that regulates, that gets rid of this vast black market that is here now, we have a better shot at it.
But how do you regulate people growing it in the backyard and not letting their teenagers get a hold of it? I think that's our caller's point.
Well, you can't stop that now. You're not stopping it now. I mean, I can't explain why New Hampshire doesn't allow the money that is collected to deal with treatment to actually be dedicated moving forward. The Constitution, the legislation that we passed in Oregon establishes resources for that. I think it's outrageous if you're not using money for its intended purpose. But we have to be realistic about what it is now and what we can do going forward.
Todd, thank you for the call. And you can join us as well, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. More in a moment. Stay with us. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're sitting down with Oregon Congressman Earl Blumenauer. He's in the Granite State this week talking about his efforts to ease federal marijuana laws, to move toward legalization. And as everyone knows, this is a giant debate going on around the country, and states have all sorts of different laws regarding marijuana. Let's hear from you, too. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Here's an email, Congressman, from Bob and Sullivan, who says, have you seen evidence that pharmaceutical companies have funded opposition to marijuana legalization? Bob, good question. Congressman, do you know?
There is speculation that there is fear from Big Pharma that if marijuana is more, the research is conducted, if their medical marijuana is more widely available, that it could cut into their profits. Look at what's going on in the NFL. There are dozens and dozens of players who have been sanctioned for being caught with having smoked marijuana. They're self-medicating. There was a fascinating article by a former tight end in the NFL who talked about how he would much rather smoke marijuana for the physical discomfort he had rather than being shot up by the team doctor with painkillers and being given opioids. It is, I think there's no doubt that this is a cheaper, safer alternative than what's happened with the explosion of opioid addiction and painkillers that is a very costly epidemic, especially here in New England.
Talking about Big Pharma, one of the concerns about legalizing pot, that it will create what opponents call big marijuana, just like Big Pharma, just like big tobacco, you know, advertising campaigns, yeah, giveaways, yeah, Joe Camel, yeah, candy cigarettes. Yeah. You know, do we really want this, Congressman?
Absolutely not. Two responses. One, people who say they don't want big marijuana, we already have big marijuana. But it's just a vast illegal market billions of dollars of profit go to Mexican drug cartels, as well as other illegal activities. Big marijuana is here now. It's the number one or number two cash crop in some of the western states, like Oregon and California. What we've done in Oregon is to have tight regulations in terms of keeping it, not marketing to kids. This is something that if we had good national laws, like we have done with tobacco, we could go forward. But that is something that should absolutely be done in terms of product safety, in terms of product placement. We're doing it in Oregon. They're doing it in Colorado. It is a concern, but the whole notion of somehow there being big marijuana, you got it now, well, but it's illegal, and we can't manage it.
Well, I have heard about pot-laced gummy bears, candy, chocolate bars. Yep. So I think you can say we wouldn't allow them to do that. But when there's a profit to be made, those companies are going to want to expand their markets. And as we saw with tobacco, as we see with alcohol, you know, there's all sorts of yummy, sugary, alcoholic-laced drinks. They're going to push the envelope and try and expand that market.
And there should
wonder if you're being realistic
and there. And there should be careful management at the state level in terms of the edibles, in terms of how they're packaged, how they're dispensed. I absolutely agree. And we're watching the limits being pushed now, for example, on smokeless or vapor e-cigarettes.
Right, vaping.
Vaping and flavored nicotine that actually can kill babies just that they're attracted to. There are all sorts of things like this that we need to be concerned about. And yes, the private sector will often push the limits, but we're in a better space to be able to control private sector pushing the limits than we are where there's a vast unregulated market where there's nobody that has access to be able to really meaningfully control it. When they're so successful outside the law.
But the unregulated market, and I hear you, I mean, there's so much underground, you know, marijuana, but the Mexican drug cartels aren't at least making pot-laced gummy bears. How do you get around, you know what I'm saying?
If there's
not
illegal,
a deliberate effort by those folks
well,
to...
I don't know that that's the case. I
to mean, make chocolate bars with marijuana.
I think the illegal market will push the limits, and if there's money to be made, they'll do it. I'm just saying what we're doing in setting it up in Oregon, what's happened in the other states, is to work to avoid it, and that people need to be realistic and compare it not to some idealized world where none of us ever use any substances that aren't good for us. Ain't going to happen. Instead, deal with the real world, how we manage it, how we control it, how we discourage inappropriate behavior, and how we protect our kids.
Well, lots of people on Facebook, Congressman, that agree with you. Ellie says it's a crime that the federal government blocks access to a drug that helps so many people with chronic pain and seizure disorders because Big Pharma, as we talk about this, can't profit from its use. Joel says if we found cannabis on another planet, given its endless list of benefits to mankind, it would be celebrated as one of the greatest discoveries of all time. Joel says it's illegal because people make money off of it being illegal. And then Adam says, legalize it, tax it, treat it like alcohol, and let people know, just like cigarettes, that they're messing up their lungs for no good reason. So there's a sampling of some of our folks on Facebook. Let's go back to our callers. And David joins us from Manchester. Hi, David. Go ahead. You're in the exchange with Congressman Earl Blumenauer.
Hi, Laura.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
Well, I just think it's great to have this conversation. So much of it's based on ignorance and lack of fact. And that is the fact that we never talk about alcohol in this way, the lives it's destroyed. Go up to Manchester on the main street any night, you're going to see kids out of control drunk. You can see them throwing up. You want to see underage kids, go to any of the three schools in the town, getting sick on a substance they're not supposed to have, being underage, alcohol. Never seen that with marijuana. I've seen people using it. I've never seen people out of control throwing up, sick, screaming, running through. I mean, I've seen some pretty high, stupid people, but that's one thing. And the other thing is just physically, it is, anyway, we've heard medical things. I'm sorry. legally, if we could tax it and fund these programs and use it towards education, so much of it is based on Black history. You know, we hate marijuana as a society. A lot of it's based on it being jazz cigarettes. Look at the roots of reefer madness in these movies. Coming out of the jazz era, the terror of it. We need a mature approach to this. And then we can really fight the real problems of methamphetamine and heroin in this state, because they aren't the same.
Okay.
They're not in the same category.
David, thank you very much for calling. A couple points there, Congressman. Do you want to follow up on what
David says? I was just going to remark, Richard Nixon empowered a marijuana commission, the Schaefer Commission, almost 50 years ago. And it was his handpicked commission. They studied it. Governor Schaefer was from Pennsylvania, and there were senators from both parties. And they concluded and recommended to President Nixon that the prohibition of marijuana was misplaced, was unnecessary.
Back in the 70s.
Back in 1970. You know, people can Google the Nixon Marijuana Commission. And President Nixon, for his own purposes, rejected that recommendation and embarked on this aggressive war on drugs that included marijuana.
And the reefer madness that David talks about.
And his commission was right then, and I think it applies today, that we need to be more realistic about what we do. And absolutely, we need to be concerned about abuse of any of these substances. But we need to be realistic, and we need to do what works. And prohibition on marijuana doesn't work any better than prohibition on alcohol.
What if, Congressman, you get your way and marijuana is legalized, and the next door that opens is to something that we know is more dangerous, like heroin? I'm imagining some people listening going, you know, slippery slope here, camel's nose under the tent.
Well, no. I mean, I think there is a world of difference. Heroin, people die of heroin overdose. It's intensely addictive and destructive. And by no stretch of the imagination are we in the same situation with marijuana. I believe in a rational policy towards marijuana. I would resist strongly any effort relax our controls on heroin, although frankly, there are countries that have a different approach to narcotic addiction than we have. I'm not prepared to go there for things like meth and heroin, cocaine. I think they are destructive. I don't think they are in the same category. But candidly, we need to be more aggressive and creative about our approach to it in these other areas. And there is no substitute for being able to have drug treatment available for anybody who wants to seek relief from their addiction. I think that's criminal when we're not helping people who recognize they've got a problem and want help, and not being there to help those people, I think, is just morally wrong.
So states like New Hampshire, where everybody acknowledges treatment for substance abuse is severely lacking, should the state, if it wants to go this way, wait until those treatment services are in place before it embarks on legalization?
Well,
you setting yourself up for trouble if you legalize this and you don't have a good substance abuse treatment system?
Well, I think New Hampshire has set itself up for trouble by not having a good treatment for conditions that kill people. I think you've got a real problem here with heroin, and you don't have the resources that have been supposedly set aside. You're not doing it evidently for alcohol. That's what I'm hearing. I have no firsthand evidence, but that's what I'm hearing from people here who are concerned that money's supposed to be available to help people in need, and it's being diverted for other purposes. So I think New Hampshire appears to have an addiction problem and needs to get its policies straight in terms of what it's going to do to help people that want to escape it.
Let's take another call, Congressman. This is Nicholas in Plymouth. Hi, Nicholas. You're on The Exchange. Welcome.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to briefly comment and get some opinions on the what seems to be irreconcilable position of the federal government in the enforcement of marijuana. Recently, there was a case that went through the federal court here in New Hampshire in which an individual was charged with one count of manufacturing marijuana, an amount that essentially is negligible on the national scale. It seems that in states, for example, Colorado, Oregon, California, you have this non-enforcement policy, whereas in New Hampshire, you have this really strict enforcement policy. So it doesn't seem that it's really coordinated on the federal level. I know that there was the Holder memo from 2013 that said essentially these are kind of the standards for a federal case.
And Nicholas, I think we just lost you there. But go ahead. I think you were picking up on what he was saying.
He is correct. There is a certain schizophrenia. First of all, it is illegal under federal law. And the amendment by Holder's deputy Attorney General Cole laid out conditions under which enforcement would be pursued. But we have 93 U.S. attorneys. The president famously said he had bigger fish to fry than trying to stop the Colorado experiment after it was approved. But we have some people in the federal government who are still frying those fish. We have challenges in terms of federal prohibition for banking services for 5,000 perfectly legal businesses across the country, forcing them to be all cash. We have punitive tax levels because they can't deduct their business expenses. They pay 2, 3, 4 times higher taxes than other state legal businesses. And the federal government's caught in the middle. Ultimately, the federal government needs to reschedule marijuana. In the meantime, it can deal with the financing and the tax issues separately. But it's a real problem. And as long as there's this individual prosecutorial discretion, we're going to find some elements of the federal government stepping in, making life difficult when under state law it shouldn't be the case. And I hope that sooner rather than later, the federal government can reconcile these differences and allow states to go their own way.
Well, a lot of people, as you said earlier, are watching Colorado. Now they'll be watching you folks in Oregon in terms of just how this works out, this legalization. What data are you going to be tracking, Congressman Blumenauer, from your home state in terms of, you know, how it's going?
Well, I'm spending a lot of time with people who are starting up with the industry. We're dealing with local government, monitoring it. I'm going to be traveling around the state looking at the implementation. We need to watch carefully in terms of focusing the enforcement and fighting vigilantly to make sure the resources dedicated for treatment are, in fact, available. This is something that is a structure that has been carefully developed, but the devil is in both the details and the commitment to implementing it.
Yeah. So what sort of details would we be looking at? Like, you know, addiction, accidental ingestion by children,
things. We have all the data that is available now to see if there is some sort of change in terms of impaired driving. If for some reason there are health problems that emerge, if we're finding the surveys, and there's pretty good data about utilization of these substances, if we start seeing a spike in younger people, those are things that we would want to monitor very closely. That's not what's occurred, for example, in Colorado 2 years in. I don't think that's going to be the case in Oregon, but we watch. We need to work together to make sure that it is effective, that an industry that develops doesn't have a black market, that the tax rate, for instance, is not too high so that it fosters a black market. So there's fine-tuning that's going to be necessary.
Very quickly, before we started talking, you said on legalization, game over in 5 years, Laura.
Yep. I bet you a lunch that within 5 years this will be handled at the state level and the federal government will not be so schizophrenic. And I'll look forward to coming back and having lunch with you.
All right. We'll see you then.
Okay.
We'll see who's buying.
You bet.
Thank you so much for being here, Congressman. I appreciate it.
It was fun.
Congressman Earl Blumenauer, he's a Democratic representative from Oregon. Again, in New Hampshire this week for a community forum on marijuana policy. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. The senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producer is Faith Meixel. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. And I'm Laura Knoy.